Hi, this is Griselda Togobo of Awobi Consulting. In this session, I have the honor of interviewing the very lovely Heather Townsend, author of the Financial Times Guide to Business Networking. The incredible thing about Heather is that she is a pro at both online and online and offline networking, and generates about, is it over 90% of new business via Twitter?
Normally it's about 90% of all my new business has been touched somewhere in the process by Twitter.
Okay, so welcome, Heather, and thank you so much for taking part in the series.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm really honoured to be asked.
Okay, can you share with us just how you started doing what you're doing now?
Yeah, I think it's probably an inspiring, well, I hope it's an inspiring story for everyone that's listening. It's just over 3 years ago, it was about 3.5 years ago when I knew, I was told I had 90 days in which to decide where my future career led, as I was being made redundant from my former employer's BDO. And at that time, I was learning and development manager, executive coach. And I thought, you know what, I know, I'll be a trainer and a coach in the outside world, specialising with professionals. Little did I know that, one, you had to be able to market and sell yourself to be able to do this properly. It doesn't matter how good a technician you are, but if you can't market or sell yourself, then you're not going to get off the ground. Two, we were in the beginning of the sharpest and the deepest, darkest recession for over 100 years. And three, people didn't have any budget to spend on people like me. But that didn't daunt me, because ignorance is bliss. I fairly quickly had to learn how to do all of that stuff. And it started, actually. It started when I went to, a month into my career as a business owner, I was like, right, I have to get out and go networking. And I went to a networking event that had a speaker talking about introduction to social networking. And I fell for the whole silver bullet line. You know, if you start blogging and tweeting and using LinkedIn, then you're going to have loads of business coming your way. You know, just the sort of things that you kind of say to clients, look, there isn't a silver bullet, but I fell for it. Right. And I got into blogging and loved it, got into Twitter and loved it. And at the time, my daughter had only just turned two and my son was three. You know, I didn't have decent childcare options. You know, nannies and childminders don't start before 7 a.m.
Yeah.
And money was tight. So getting out in the evening and having to spend money on a babysitter and getting out there and the whole razzmatazz of logistics just didn't work that well. So I used Twitter mainly as my mechanism for initially meeting people, and then followed that up generally with phone calls and then meeting them in person. And that's really been my networking model for the last 3 years, and it's served me incredibly well. And so back to the story. So 6 months after I'd done that, I was getting rave reviews for my blogs. People were coming to me left, right, and centre through Twitter, and I couldn't understand it. I was like,
What am I doing right?
Well, absolutely. And people coming to me going, so you get 90% of your business through Twitter? And I'm like, yeah, you know, don't you? And they're like, no, what are you doing? And so that's the point where I started to sort of go, well, what am I doing?
Yes.
And I realised that the marketplace at the time, so this was early now, 2010, was going, hey, it's all about online networking for the social media avids, or it's all about offline networking for the sort of people that hadn't really got it. And then there were the kind of marketeers in the background going, no, it's social media marketing, it's great. And I'm like, but isn't this all just the kind of same thing? Yeah. Isn't this all just about being close to the people that matter, about making sure it's a networking tool and you choose the right tool for the right job? And so I coined the phrase joined up networking.
Yes, and that's the name of your blog, isn't it?
Absolutely, and I'd always wanted to write a book because I'd heard that the best consultants elevated themselves. If you wanted to become a decent freelance consultant, you needed a book to your name. And I've never been one to turn down a challenge. The fact that the last time I wrote an essay was at the age of 16 for my GCSEs, that has never stopped me writing 57,000 words in a book. The fact that I'm not a completer finisher has never stopped me. It's amazing what the power of a deadline can do to you. And Those is all truth. I wish I could say that this was a well thought out and I'd gone into it and I'd been incredibly planned. I spotted an opportunity. And so I sat down with my editor, because I think one of the things is, if you're serious about it, you've got to make a commitment. And one of the biggest commitment you can make is to start paying money to a professional, whether it's a yes. coach, whether it's an editor in a book. But is that really, I think, takes you from thinking about it, maybe doing it, into actually, I'm really serious, I'm paying for this now.
Yeah, I put my money where my mouth is.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you kind of say, right, I'm going to get offices. I think it's that same kind of, right, this is a commitment. It takes it up a level. And I sat down with Sonia, my editor, in April 2010, and I said, look, I've got to walk my walk and talk my talk here. So I'm going to set myself a goal, you know, good coach here, let's set myself a goal. I said, in 6 months' time, I want a publisher to come have found me and asked me to commission this book on joined up networking. And as you can imagine, that is naivety at its highest. What I know now was that I was probably living in blissful ignorance, but 6 weeks later, because I'd been blogging about networking, talking about networking, 6 weeks later, Liz, who was at that time the commissioning editor at the FT, came and said to me through, because she'd seen a blog of mine on business owners, she said, Heather, would you consider writing a book on networking for us? And so I said, yes, of course. And wow, starstruck moment. And so we had a chat. I explained my concept for the book and she loved it. So I put the proposal in. They loved it. And she turned around to me and she said, look, big idea. Should we call it the FT Guide to Business Networking? Wow. And I thought for all of a moment. And then I thought, all right then. And pretty much since that point, my kind of what I was doing, a fair amount of associate work on the training side, supplemented about 50% by my own coaching work. So really helping professionals in small practices, you know, we're talking about one person practices to five person practices, helping them as a traditional business coach. And so very much I was doing about 50% associate, 50% coaching. And since that time, my workload has changed. So I now do about 50, 60% with mid-tier to some of the large firms around social media consultancy, strategy, training, and including business networking, as I lump, you know, call it referral marketing if you want, but both the strategy and also the how-tos. And I do about 20, 30% business coaching still with, because I love doing it. And then about 10% is my writing time. And that's that. Hopefully that's enough of a story to kind of tell you how I got there today.
Right. So you will attribute most of it to making that decision to get a book published.
I think you could say that a lot of the success has come from getting the book published, but then you can take a step back and you can say, well, what I've actually done is I've created a compelling personal brand. Now, lots and lots of people get a book published, but not everybody is able to elevate themselves to the level of profile that I've managed to do. And I think there are some fairly fundamental reasons why I've managed to do that, is I have never stopped marketing that book right from the point in time where I announced on Twitter that I was going to write a book on networking. Now, when I announced that I was going to write a book on networking, that was in January 2010. The book only got published in June 2011. And within the first year, I've sold over 5,000 copies of the book. It's into its fourth reprint. It's got an award. It's top of the rankings from Amazon. That has only come because I'm regularly blogging about networking. I'm regularly talking about networking. I'm doing speaking about networking. I'm now training about networking. I'm doing all of that stuff. And so I've got the bits and pieces around it. And I notice if I stop, if I kind of have a bit of a break on blogging about networking, on joined up networking, what tends to happen is my book sales go down. And right. So it is very much driven by I've got the social proof through the testimonials and I'm living and I'm breathing and I've grown this personal brand. The book is just one part of that.
Right. So can you share with us some of the specific strategies you used? I know you've mentioned networking in the book and social media, but what else do you think you did that elevated your business from maybe zero to 20K to 100K?
first and foremost, so many professionals like me, whether they're a coach, a consultant, accountant, a lawyer, they try and be a one-stop shop. You hear them saying, well, actually, I can do this, 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 and this. Or you hear them saying, well, this is what I really like to do, but I can do all of this. You look at their website and it kind of goes, and they think they're being specialists by saying, I focus on working with small businesses. And I'm like, that's not specialist, because pretty much you either work with large businesses or small businesses.
Yeah,
that's really not specialized. Or they kind of go, I do everything. So you look at a typical trainer's website and they'll go team building, they'll go communication training, they'll go leadership programs, they'll go executive.
Yeah, the whole gamut of everything.
Everything. And I can tell you now, I can do all of that. I've done all of that. I've got 12 years as a learning and development profession. If I need to learn something, I could in 2 weeks and deliver it to the level of an expertise. But one of the key decisions I took was to very carefully niche myself. So the first thing I did was that I said, right, okay, I'm fiddling around saying I specialize in professionals and small business owners. And I stopped that and I said, it's professionals. And then if you look at my stuff, it really is almost predominantly accountants and lawyers, although I'm starting to build up a nice little niche in financial services as well, as I've had about four or five months through there. But if you look at everything I do, it should hit you between the eyes that my core specialism is I help professionals become the go-to expert.
Yes.
That is my overarching brand. And if you look at everything I do, it fits under that. You look at the next stage of my journey, which is about my next book, which is How to Make Partners Still Have a Life. Now, that only gets published in November, but I am busy squirreling away marketing that as we speak. And most authors, they only start thinking about marketing the book when they've physically got it in their hand.
Right.
Okay. It's about one of the key things that I do, and I'm sorry, I'm swamping you with details, and I'm just chatting.
No, that's exactly what I wanted. So go for it. That's exactly why I'm doing this call, because sometimes when you see people out there, you know all the general concepts, but you want to know exactly the difference that makes the difference, and specifically what they're doing. Yeah.
So if I'm to crystallize it down, the first thing is I build a community. Before I've built the community, I really decide what is it that I'm going after. How am I going to communicate my brand to the outside world? What does that look like? And I predominantly, because it's my preferred option, use social media and online PR because I get it for free. It's old-fashioned content marketing using a new-fashioned vehicle. That's all it is. So it's being very, very clear about who am I going after. So, for example, if you met me at a networking event and you asked me, who do I want to meet? I will tell you that if you bump into any lawyer or accountant that's a member of a local firm but not a partner yet,
right,
introduce me, because I can help them, one, achieve their career ambition, because if they're out networking, they're looking to win business. And if they look out networking to win business, then they're normally thinking, I want to be a partner.
But that's a very tight niche, though, because I'm an accountant as well, and I come from a very big corporate, big four background. And I know making partner is such a huge deal. It's why most people go into the profession.
Yep, yep. That is a very, very tight call to action when I meet you. But it's memorable. It's very memorable. And you look at the whole gamut of what I do. So I've got everything from the how to make partner and still have a life. And those people that haven't met me before I even did any of the business networking, that's what I used to do in-house, was very much helping people achieve their career ambitions in a big top six accountancy firm. And all I've done is I've kind of gone, right, the marketplace for social media consultancy training is going to dry up in terms of the premium rates in about 6-12 months. So I'm a very, very strategic thinker, and you've got to be looking ahead, particularly if you're selling a service, because what is a premium service today in 18 months' time, 2 years' time, will probably be a commodity, and will have price rates sort of with that attached. Is to go back to where I want to be, using the skills I've gained along the way. Because everything I now do is underpinned by my expertise in referral marketing, profile building. And it is about being very, very clear about what I want, how I'm going to get it, and where I get there.
Yeah, I remember because I did a bit of research on you, and when you started, it was the efficiency coach.
Yes, yes.
So how did that evolve, and at what point did you realize that, right, this niche isn't going to work, and I need to get more specialized, and this is the niche I'm going for?
So the brand came about just before I left. So I was towards the end of my 90 days. I did a 4-day thinking program with the GoMad group, which is really excellent. And we were having a discussion about my business and what it was, and I hadn't got a name for it. And I'd come up with, or what I did was I saved people time, energy, and money. And so the guy said, well, you're an efficiency coach then. And then the name stuck. And it was a good name to start with. It was catchy. It was flexible enough to sort of decide where I wanted to take it.
Yeah.
But I had to take a long, hard look at myself, particularly with the FT Guide to Business Networking coming along. And I realized that I'm very good at getting things done, but I am really inefficient at doing it. I now have a backup team of 2 people to help me seem to the world as if I'm efficient. It's true. And I had a real values mismatch between my brand name and who I was. And I think one of the things that anyone who kind of steps out of corporate life is going to experience is you experience a huge journey of self-awareness, because you throw the shackles off of who everybody else wants you to be and you really find out who you want to be. Because after all, if you're not the person you want to be, you can't get up at 9 a.m. in the morning, or rather, not that you can't be at your desk at 9 a.m. in the morning on a Monday full of beans. And you don't put food on the table, you can't do that. So you learn fairly quickly in this process that you have to follow your passions. You have to really be congruent with who you are and what you do.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, Efficiency Coach wasn't a good branding for me. It just didn't work. And in essence, my end goal is to be seen as the top strategist to the professional services industry. I want to be working with leadership teams, high potentials, and using my coaching and my consultancy skills at that level. And so very much because of the FT Guide has elevated me as a brand, you've got the How to Make Partner as the next kind of element to the brand. There is a third book that will be starting to write next year that will help me in this journey. But it was too... I was diluting the message of the efficiency coach, and by reverting to really Heather Townsend as my personal brand, it's enabled me to have far more flexibility and follow where I want to go. So, for example, one of my little projects at the moment is more just to see if I can. Is that with my writing, it's been very, very focused on business topics for professionals. And I'm a storyteller at heart. And if you've read any of my blogs, you'll realize I'm a storyteller.
Yeah, your stories are really good. It's very flexible as well, what you write about. You write about sleeping and eating and the kids and then business.
Yeah, and unfortunately, because I'm writing for a very professional audience, there's only so much of my person I can show. So I'm having a little bit of fun writing a blog with a friend of mine who's also a mum at the school gate, and we're writing things my mother never taught me. Which is a lifestyle blog for the no longer 20-something or other lady, as she kind of finds out what's right for her, normally because she's gone through childbirth and having kids. And I don't know about your circumstances, but one of the things I find having a 5-year-old and 6-year-old is when you've got really young children is your identity is completely swallowed up and you lose time.
Oh, tell me about that. You're like Macabre's mum.
But then... when you've kind of gone, okay, I'm not going to have any more children, and your children grow up, you know, you need to refine yourself. You need to kind of find your style. You need to find out what suits you. Also, in my business life, I've gone from being just an internal learning and development manager to being somebody who, you're the second person actually in the last couple of days who's kind of said my profile is huge, which I'm like, wow, is it? I didn't realize. But that becomes an expectation. So, you know, there were little things like I'm now 36, and it's like, and I'm ashamed to admit it, but I've a full head of grey hair. That's because my mother and my father gave me genes that meant I started going grey 20 years ago. And it's like, right, I've got to the point where I no longer want to dye my hair. How the hell do I go grey naturally without a comical two-tone stripe? I want to write out those things. I want to kind of help people experience the journey. And I have to say, and so it's been very low-key, but it gives me a way of demonstrating, can I write for a consumer audience? Can I do something that's slightly different? And at the back of my mind, I'm also thinking, can I build up enough collateral to do a self-published book around things my mother never taught me?
That sounds like a very catchy topic already, because there's just so, I mean, as women, we have, you know, all the challenges of being a woman and a mom in business. It's interesting, because when you start blogging as well and you have a voice and you have an opinion, you just look for outlets for it. And that's what you're doing on the personal side as well.
Absolutely. And, you know, if people are listening to this and going, well, what is something that I do very well, is I'm very good at spotting gaps. So way back in January 2010, I spotted the gap in the marketplace that people didn't get that it was about joined up networking. It's not about online or off. I spotted that gap. I've now lived off for the last 18 months a decent base of revenue through spotting that gap. The How to Make Partner and Still Have a Life was the book that I wanted to write 3 years ago. It was the book that I knew that had to be written, because the professions are crying out for that book, but it's not been written. Right. It now has. I kind of wrote the FT guide because it was a safe, it was an option that got me onto the stage. It then meant that I had two publishers fighting over my next book. It enabled me to get the platform and get the sort of the tools around that I would have needed, that I would have never have had if I hadn't have done the FT guide in the first place.
Yeah. I mean, the FT name is such a massive name. So having that in your bio is just such a big thing.
Absolutely. The other thing I do is, so the things my mother never taught me is just such a catchy title. And I realize that there's so many lifestyle blogs out there, but there's none that's really there for people in my situation who are kind of going, right, how do I stop being the yummy mummy? Or sorry, how do I start being the yummy mummy? Yeah, let's get, you know, you know, the next book will be around how do you grow your professional services firm, because there's nothing really that's currently in date. And really relevant, I would say, to the people there. There's the classic of David Meister, the real textbook, but it's time that was updated into the realities of what is the modern day professional service firm facing. So all along, what I do is I tend to spot gaps. I go after that gap, and I make it work for me. I pick up skills in doing that. So, for example, I happen to know very much how to easily, very very easily, build a decent book audience. If you talk to my publisher, they will say to you that out of the 5,000 books I've sold, about 4,000 have come from my own marketing efforts.
Yeah, because I've been seeing you even on LinkedIn, on Twitter, newsletters. You're always mentioning the book and the review. So you've been pushing it a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, writing a book is one thing, but actually getting a book that's sold and sells really well is a different ballgame, isn't it?
Absolutely. And so part of my thinking is, well, build up my portfolio of books, because I enjoy writing books. It's what I like doing. It's what I'm good at. One of my other skills is about crystallizing down lots of complex information into what you really need to know, and being able to do that and get the message across in a very easy, non-jargon way of understanding it. I've kind of done the published thing. Let's kind of use my knowledge to do the self-published thing. Let's use that to generate a passive income for me that allows me to play around.
And write more books.
But let's kind of see, can I do something in the consumer arena? Can I do something in the B2B arena? Can I do it self-published? And then why don't I then challenge myself to set up a nice little business that enables, effectively with an outsourced team, that kind of says, when someone says, I want to write a book, and I go, right, okay, bish, bash, bosh. This is how you do it, and these are the selected experts. Pay your money, off you go.
You know, Heather, from what you're saying, it sounds like you're not afraid of failing at any of the things you're trying at. Because for like most of some people I speak to, they are just consumed by the thought of trying something new and it going wrong.
No, I have very little fear of failure. As long as I can put, and my it's interesting, people, I will say to you, I'm not motivated by money. And anybody that says to you they're not motivated by money is normally lying. What they're meaning is the amount that they need to bring in each month is usually quite small. And for me, I don't need to bring in 10K a month. Actually, my kind of target is just 3K a month. And I have to say, when you have a small, when you're not motivated by money, and actually you're more motivated by your passion, you're motivated by let's having a go, I think it gives you the freedom to really have a go. Yeah. And I have had failures. Don't get me wrong. Some people would say starting off with a brand name that was starting to catch on and then deciding not to use it could be considered a failure. I just called it a learning experience. One of the things that I did was something called the Executive Village, which was
yes, I've seen that one as well.
A mastermind organization that was which was on a pay as you go basis, and I learned how to run a networking group. I also learned how, I nearly swore then, I mustn't swear, how very hard it is to scale up a networking group and to also monetize a networking group. And as a result of that, we'd taken a strategic decision to not do it anymore. So you could say that's a failure. Or you could say, actually, we've taken a lot from it and know what it takes to run a networking group and we ain't going anywhere near that.
That's interesting. Okay, I have a question on mistakes you've made, and you mentioned a few, but what's the biggest one you think you've made that you've learnt the most from?
Oh, I've made loads of mistakes.
The most costly one, then.
Yeah, here's one. A while ago, I was forming a strategic partnership, and you know we're very serious about strategic partnerships, and that's our one of our main routes into the marketplace through strategic partnerships. And I was doing a first business meeting with one of the directors of the strategic partnership, and I went away from the meeting feeling it gone really well. And I then got accused after the meeting by the director that wasn't there of hijacking the client, being unprofessional, and it was just a nightmare. Mm. And I learned a lot through the experience. One of those is don't always assume the monkeys talk to the organ grinder. Two, before you go into any meeting with any other client, anybody else's client, be absolutely clear about the ground rules. Three, so for us, you know, we're very entrepreneurial, so we will kind of develop the business and then think, right, who do we need to deliver this? Whereas the organization was very much need to go away and think, can we deliver this business before we even talk about doing it? So one of the big learnings, if you're going to go into a strategic partnership, you've got to have a values match, not just with your direct person you're dealing with, but with the other key people in the business. Mm. You have a process map of your attitudes to how you develop new business. And for example, we learned in the process that I don't know how many of the listeners are familiar with the sort of training world, but people tend to split into either trainers or consultants.
Yes.
And what trainers means is actually I deliver a presentation skills course. This is my course. You ring me up. You tell me how many times you want to deliver it and how many people are going to be there. I will, of course, bespoke it slightly, but it's very much, here's my catalogue, which course do you want approach? Whereas I'm very much on the, what are the business drivers for this? What are the reasons for it? What are the key things? And I'll funnel out and I'll find exactly what's going on. And I'll then do, okay, so these are the solutions you want. And what is the sustainable program beneath this? How do you get the behavioral change? How do you make sure that you're not just paying for a perceived silver bullet that's not going to do anything? And the organization that we were partnering with was very much, here's the catalog, how many would you like?
Right.
Consequently, those two approaches just completely blew up after this meeting. And yes, that was probably one of the biggest, most painful mistakes, which had some reputational risks involved, but those are being managed, let's just put it that way.
Right, perfect. Because sometimes, you know, when you go, I find that there are so many challenges in business. And you might think that you're the one making the biggest mistakes, but when you speak to somebody else and you find out, actually, I'm not strange, everybody's making some amount of mistakes, then it sort of makes you feel better. And then it allows you, gives you permission to just carry on despite the mistakes you might be making.
Oh, absolutely. Of course I've made mistakes. And when you ask the question, think, I've not lost £1 million. I'm not. and you know, there's a couple of things, like, I tend not to see them as mistakes. I always tend to see them, and it sounds cliched, but I see them as, what do I learn from this situation? And I think one of the things that so many people in business forget to do is have reflection time, is that you can be on the go so much, but actually if you don't have reflection time, you can't learn from your mistakes, and then you make them time and time and time again. So one of my biggest problems is, as you may have noticed, I'm enthused by ideas, I'm enthused by potential.
Yeah, it's very refreshing, actually.
It's about, right, what is the latest shiny, sparkly bauble I can chase?
That is in direct opposite to what you're advised to do.
Absolutely. So, but I've learned that that's what I'm like. Consequently, I've built a team around me to keep me grounded.
Right.
We have a permanent employee in the business, John and I. There's three of us in our business. John, my co-director. And part of the reason I joined my business together with John was I was getting fed up of being my own worst enemy. And so now the two of us are our own worst enemy, but at least we've got a sounding board, we've got a point of accountability, which very much helped me with the sort of going off into the distance. And one of the things that John does is he brings the discipline, he brings the structure, he brings the rigor, and that reins me in from my excesses. And I've learnt that along the way. We have Lisa in the business. Lisa is my chief organizer. Well, actually, our chief organizer.
Yeah.
And every business needs Lisa.
Very sweet of you.
But what does Lisa do? Is every day I will get two, maybe three emails going, what are you doing with this? What are you doing with that? Organize this meeting, organize that meeting. Because one of the things that was impacting my ability to achieve was my admin, my ability to manage my time, manage my diary. Was you see why I couldn't be the efficiency coach?
Yes, I see that now.
But it's because I now have the awareness of it. I've got somebody in the business. And each of these kind of awarenesses has taken initial investment, but it's taken the business to the next level. So the decision to focus on professionals, not business owners, professionals, really kick-started my coaching business. The decision then to work with John took me from a feast and famine into, actually, within our first year, we had a six-figure business together, and we achieved, I think it was 25% more than our projected income.
Brilliant.
Within another 18 months, we'll double that business and take it to the quarter of a million.
Brilliant. Wow. But it's just the power of synergies.
It's the power of synergies, but it's also the power of learning from your mistakes.
Okay. So, what mentors have you worked with? Have you worked with any mentors since you started?
Absolutely. So when I first started, I was part of a co-coaching organization. One of the benefits of being a qualified coach, being a coach, was that there are lots of these co-coaching organizations where you pay a small amount of money and effectively get the privilege of being matched with someone to coach and someone to coach you. And I find that really helpful to start with, having somebody with a sounding board, somebody with an accountability. And I only stopped using them because I had a bad experience with probably one of the most highly qualified coaches I could have had from the site.
Do you want to share that?
I don't think I'm too worried about it. I've not done any names. and then since that, I've been working with John, so I've got that level of accountability, and that's been really helpful. I'm now again working with my own coach, because for me, I've got a few demons that I need to sort out. And one of those is, for me, integrity is a real core value to what I do.
Yeah.
I've got to walk my walk and talk my talk. Yes. And one of the things that I'm very aware of is I went in and set up my business so that I could be there for my children. And what I was finding was, as I became more and more successful, I was finding it harder to do that. And so I'm working with my own coach to help me get my business life back under the into the sort of balance that I want.
Yes. I mean, that's I also started my business because of my son, and I find that there's so much work involved. You really have to be strict about the boundaries and be really efficient if you can keep growing and still feel like you're being a good mom and being there for your child, because it all sounds really, it sounds wrong.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm starting my business to look after my son, but then my business takes so much time. I don't spend any time with my son.
Yeah, and it's the thing is, I never, ever, ever expected the kind of 24/7 mind thinking about your business, particularly in the first 18 months. You know, that roller coaster of it's always on your mind. You're always thinking about it. And one of the biggest challenges I've got is to switch off that.
Switching off, yes. That's the same here.
And the difficulty I've got at the moment is it's the summer holidays. So I've consciously taken a decision to move my business from 5 days down to 3 days for those 6 weeks. But I'm one of these people that I find it takes me a couple of days to switch from business focus to non-business focus. And then it takes me a couple of days to switch it back up again. And so having odd days off here and there is just not working for me.
Right, right, right.
Managing to do neither particularly well.
Right, right. But it's knowing yourself, isn't it, and what works for you, so you can be happy doing what you're doing.
Absolutely. Right. And it all comes back to, you know, in terms of being a successful entrepreneur, is that if you're going to be successful, you've got to be passionate about what you've got to be. You've got to be passionate about what you do. You've got to have the aptitude for what you've got to do. And you've got to have so much energy to be able to deliver that. And if you've got part of your life not working, that zaps your energy, which means that your business performance just doesn't hit the road.
Right. You know, you mentioned earlier on about feast and farming. How did you manage the whole cash flow problem? Because it's a problem that small businesses really struggle with.
So one of the things that we do in our business is that we will weekly look at our cash flow. So the first thing you need to do is you need to have focus and you've got to keep your eye on it. And we are looking ahead. So we had it. Quarter two was slightly lean and down on forecast, so we reined back our spending, right, which with that. But in terms of the whole feast and famine approach, is what normally drives the feast and famine approach is inconsistent marketing. Is that when you're kind of rolling flat out, is what you cut is you cut the marketing. And most of us don't have a short sales cycle. If most of us are honest, if you're anything in a service business, your sales cycle can be 3 months up to 3 years.
Yeah.
And you've got to keep the lead generation and the conversion machine going even when you're flat out. So what that means is you've got to be doing your capability planning. You've got to leave yourself time to carry on doing the marketing whilst you're flat out. And you need to learn how to either say no or outsource. Or kind of see how much can be delayed of the work coming in to allow you that time to market. It's as simple as that. Most of us, the reason why it's feast and famine, there's not a plan, the marketing's not consistent. Consequently, you get these seesaws of feast and famine. And it's happened to me. You know, after I won my first 20K contract, and I did that, I had that for 6 months, which was great. The money kind of spread itself over 9 months, which gave me a cushion. I then spent, after I finished that contract, 6 months writing the FT guide. I then almost had to rebuild my business after I handed the manuscript in.
Right.
Because I just not had the focus on marketing for 8-9 months.
Yeah. But that's been such a priority thing. And it's been something that's enhanced your brand. So
yeah,
it's just weighing the cost and the benefits of what you're doing. And
that it doesn't matter whether you're writing a book, it doesn't matter if it's going to put food on tomorrow, you still have to keep food coming today. And that means you've got to have a marketing machine that you turn and you keep turning regardless of where you're at with the work coming in. Yes, you might need to turn it slightly less, but you can't stop it. You can't kind of go, right, I've got enough days over the next couple of months booked with clients to stop. It doesn't work.
Sorry.
The people go in is, well, I didn't sign up to be a marketing and sales person. I signed up to be the best trainer, the best consultant, the best accountant, the best recognition I could. That's probably why they stopped kind of going up the chain in their company, because they were being forced into management and business development away from what they loved doing. And so they kind of go, I know, I'll outsource that side of my business to someone else. And I have to say that there are some very good telemarketing people out there. And don't get me wrong, there are some very good outsourced business development people out there. But
sorry.
You, because you're passionate about your business, they're buying you at the end of the day. It's only when you've got your business to a certain size that you can afford to kind of start delegating and bring on business development specialists.
Right. So that's a top tip for anybody listening to this.
Yeah.
So you've told us how you manage your time, and I think, yeah, I was going to ask you about your top time management tips, but I think it's been the help that you've had.
Yeah, and the other thing is, I have to say, you need to put time, default diary is the way forward. It's like, if you're going to commit to spend a day on marketing your business every week, which is what John and I do, commit to spending a day on marketing your business every week, block that out in your diary, make it happen. Fridays normally... time is our day for doing marketing. We sit there and we go through and we work on the business instead of in the business.
Yep.
So if something is important to you, put it in your diary, make it happen. You know, there are no excuses for coming second in this world.
Oh, that's so lovely, Heather.
It's a bit tough, motivational. No excuses for coming second, you know. My daughter, she said, what do the people who come fourth get in the Olympics? And I said, nothing. She goes, but that's not fair. I go, but that's life, you know.
Yeah. Even when you get a silver, it's not as good as a gold. I mean, you should get gold if you can.
Yeah, but there are no prizes for coming second in a tender.
All right. So we'll just end off now with some top Twitter tips.
Oh, you mean I've got to talk about Twitter?
Yes. Because, you know, before we got on the call, when you sent that tweet out, about 4 people replied.
Yeah,
and that's a record within what, less than a minute.
Well, what are my top tips for Twitter? Right, this is a very immediate communications medium. What that means is you've got to have a high level of visibility. You cannot kind of go in once, twice a week and expect to be generating anything from that medium. You really have to commit. That means go in there every day. Commit to conversations every day, provide a balance of what I would call content, i.e. stuff that will draw the right people to you that they're going to be interested in reading, and conversations. But also don't forget to remember it's a networking medium, don't forget to put what I would call a couple of relationship hooks. A lot of people say to me, oh, but I don't want to hear about somebody eating cheese sandwiches. No, but it gives you the ability to start a conversation. And if you're clever, when you put the tweet out about this is what I'm having for my lunch, you put a question that invites a conversation, because all those are as relationship hooks, and you need them as much as you need the conversations and the sort of here's my blog post, here's a great article, here's a tip. You need a mixture of all three. The next thing is to save time on Twitter is schedule and automate the content, but you cannot delegate the conversation. So if your time is short, commit to going in once a day, just in the same way that you check your email, you check your voicemail, commit to going into Twitter and finding 3 or 4 people to make a comment with, start a conversation with, but put loads of questions that invites people to make comments. If you're there and you help people, it's amazing how many things you get in return. So as you say, I put the fact that I was having this interview kind of wish me luck, as you say,
yeah.
We had 4 people going, good luck. I will go back and I'll say thank you to those people and say, yeah, well, I've had a great time. I've been talking about myself. What more could I do?
What's better than that?
Talk to any kind of entrepreneur who's in love with what they're doing, and they're passionate about their business. The difference is you have to find the slots to get the question in rather than the other way around.
Yes. Oh, it's been really brilliant talking to you, Heather. So, if anybody wants to find out more about you and your book, where should they go?
If they want to read the FT Guide to Business Networking, what I suggest they do is they just do a search on Amazon, or they look at www.joinedupnetworking.com. If they want to kind of hear a bit more about my sort of thoughts about running a business and more of that side of things, they might like to go to www.partnershippotential.co.uk. And if they're listening and thinking, actually, I know somebody who's trying to get to partner, then the How to Make Partner and Still Get a Life book, that comes out in November of this year. But there is the blog site, www.howtomakepartner.com.
Perfect. Thank you. And again, this is Griselda Togobo of Awovi Consulting. And you can find me at www.awovi.com. Thank you. Bye.